Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, I feel like this has come at a very good time, mate. It seems like there's a lot to talk about. And I think especially from a club's perspective as well, whilst we've got this week off, Unai and co don't have to face the media to answer the questions about the players that we're going to talk about right now, mate. But we've got a bumper-packed episode for you guys. Before we get into it, Dan, how are you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been a very busy day. Maybe the busiest kind of couple of days we've had since the window started. And I suppose that's only right, given that it's come in the middle of this kind of 2-week break that we've got going on. We both said that this was the time to get any business done. And as you rightly say, it's a time away from the spotlight. You can go away and work in the shadows, get it done quietly. And it seems like Villa are being quite active in this period. So we've got a whole bunch. It's kind of like a, you know, this is a news flash, really. There's all sorts of bits and pieces that we've got to fill you guys in on. But I always like to top the episodes with a little shout out, mate. And we've got to shout out what is a massive result in the WSL tonight.
Absolutely.
Because boy, oh boy, did we need it. Picks up a 1-0 win against Leicester. It's only the first time, to the second time, sorry, we went back-to-back games this season. It's not been a great start to the year, but it kind of starts to feel that maybe Carlo Ward and the girls have got their ducks in a row and they're starting to turn things around. With 7 back-to-back clean sheets, back-to-back wins, Rachel Daly's back on the score sheet, it's starting to feel like maybe the wheels are in motion. And so if we can kind of recover to, you know, around 6th, 5th, that kind of place, I think we can do well. I think the top 4 are maybe too far gone. But yeah, massive result. And so we've got to start with some good news.
Absolutely. It's a shame, really. I feel like what felt like a big leap last year in terms of the women's project, it seems to have gone 1 step forward, 3 back. I think there's been quite a few questionable off-field decisions made in regards to players departing the club. I'm sure a lot of you guys in the comment section will be more clued upon that than I am, but as somebody who kind of keeps an eye on it, isn't an expert, something just doesn't really seem right, especially given the success of last season. So, as you said, mate, that is a massive result. That is, hopefully, the start of a new chapter. New year, new Villa ladies. Let's get it. But, mate, we've got a bit of a transfer saga on our hands.
We do.
It's been a while since we've had one of these, hasn't it? It's been a little while. And I'm sat here and we've not spoke about Morgan Rogers yet. So, naturally, this is the first time we will talk about him. We'll give our opinion of him as a player to you guys. And also just discuss what's gone on, really. But I'm sort of sat here and I'm like, I totally understand just how complicated it is for these transfers to get done. This is not as easy as walking into a room and saying, I'm going to give you this much, and they go, done deal. It's nothing like Football Manager. It's nothing like that. You know, that's the first thing to preface, right? But I would imagine at the time where we're sort of on the phone to them discussing the Finazaz deal, that this would have maybe come up. And I'm just wondering how we managed to get the Azaz deal done so quickly and Borough don't really seem to be playing ball, or maybe it's us that don't really seem to be playing ball. You would suspect it is us, mate, because we've now had to make our 3rd bid for Morgan Rogers now, haven't we? And it's becoming a bit of a thing.
It is. So we made 2 bids for this lad on Thursday, both of which, it seems, were swiftly rejected. And John Percy, who I think is kind of the gold standard when it comes to Villa journos, particularly when it comes to transfers, tweeted that he expects this one to run. So absent an end is an insight, but it seems, well, I think we can definitely say that our interest is concrete and that, yeah, these bids both have been lodged on Thursday. So apparently they fell short, as you know, you probably can imagine, of Borough's expected kind of transfer value. He's a young asset. He's only 21 years old. He's only 6 months into a 4-year contract. So you can understand why they're perhaps not very eager to sell. They bought him from Man City in the summer. Apparently Man City have got a pretty hefty sell-on fee in there as well, which is why it makes even more sense for Borough to get as much money as they can from him, because it's more money that they get from this deal. They're already losing, it seems, a fairly significant chunk of it to Manchester City. So the more money that they can make from this deal, the better for all parties. It's not a name that I necessarily expect to be linked with. It's quite an interesting one. He's got two goals in the Championship this season, though they both did come against Blues and West Brom. So you could say the stars have been aligning on this deal for a little while. He's well known to a lot of Villa staff, though, and I think that's where this gets interesting. He was formerly at West Bromwich Albion, I believe, so he played under Steve Hopscroft, who's now at Villa, under Mark Harrison as well, and it kind of feels like Villa have kind of had their eye on these players and their respective careers. And it's kind of come around now to this point where Villa have lodged a couple of bids. This Hales Owen-born youngster, he trained as expected with Borough today. He's expected to be in Borough's squad for Saturday's game against Rotherham United. So it looks like we're not going to see any major movements on this until, well, potentially after the weekend. But it feels like Villa's interest here is really, really concrete. And it's starting to feel now like we're getting an idea after the Nedeljkovic rumours came out earlier, and we got the here we go from Fabrizio. So we're recording this on Friday. Apparently today is the day where he's travelled to Ballymore, had his medical and everything like that. So hopefully we'll get an official announcement soon. By the time you're listening to this, we might have an official announcement on that one. We're starting to get a couple of feelings of, well, both the main players that we're going to talk about in this window, that we're starting to see Villa's transfer window really take shape. And all of the players are a very similar profile as well. Young, a lot of upside, high potential, a lot of resale value. And so it's interesting to see that the Villa have kind of gone back to that, because I kind of felt that Villa deviated from that from a little while. When you look at a lot of our transfers, they're often quite experienced, particularly the two left-backs we went and signed in Digne and then Alex Moreno. So, you know, we signed a fair few players who were getting upwards towards 30. You look at Diego Carlos as well, who's another example. This is back to kind of what we were doing when we came up from the Championship. And it's always exciting, I think, when you do it this way with players that perhaps we don't know as well. Because it's always that little bit more exciting, I think, when you get to know them.
I think where we are now, and I think a lot of people may disagree with me, and I would love to know what people have to say in the comment section down below. I think this is you kind of have to make these signings at this point, right? Because we've got an 11. I think we've got half of a bench. I think, you know, there's some games where I look at the bench and I think, really great depth. You know, I think we've got two or three, maybe even four options off the bench here that could really change the game at any given time. That is dependent on injuries, opposition, who starts, all that. You know, there's a lot of context to put there. But we're kind of at a stage now where John Duran, it's a kind of like, will he, won't he? Unai has kind of came out and cleared that all up. I think we didn't talk about this before, mate, but I think we probably should talk about John Duran at some point in this episode, and his comments about, you know, the moves away and all that kind of stuff. Unai seems to be, you know, on good terms with John Duran. At least that's the latest update that we've got. But you kind of look at him and it's like, is he ready? I think it's a coin toss, really. You know, you guys all know mine and Dan's stance on Duran. We've seen him. He's definitely raw, but he's scored goals in the Premier League, which is more than a lot of other Villa strikers can really say for themselves, really. You know, I want to shout out Keelan Davis because he made his return the other day from injury. Is Udinese he's at in Syria? So, and you know, long-time listeners of the channel will know this is the Keenan Filler podcast, was the Wesley Filler podcast. Isn't the John Duran filler podcast.
Is it Rogers filler now, mate? Is this what it is?
I think it might be. But like, I look at, I can totally get, and I probably fall in this camp too. I don't think we can honestly like look at Duran and go, if Watkins is injured, this guy will score us goals. I'm not saying that we can do the same with Morgan Rogers, right? I'm not saying that he is the Lord and Savior and he's going to come in and score goals straight away. That clearly isn't the case because, you know, with all due respect to him, he has been, you know, plying his trade in the Championship. And what I will say is he looked like a very good player against us. Played as a sort of shadow striker in our cup game, just behind Josh Coburn. But I think like right now, and this is the debate that has, you know, been going on for so long, and I seem to enrage a load of people on Twitter about it the other day when I suggested that I liked Dominic Solanke. But we clearly aren't going for a Solanke type, are we, mate? We're going for, like, Solanke's kind of like, for me, the middle ground between a Duran and a Watkins. I think Solanke's in a fantastic vein of form right now. I think he's got the potential to be just as good as Ollie Watkins. I do think they are two very different players. I think he's got the potential to be just as good. But we're clearly looking at someone like Rodgers as somebody who can come in, who can learn, who is already acclimatized to English football, as you pointed out, mate, familiar with the local area as well. All of the delights that come with being from the West Midlands, that's not going to be, you know, there's not going to be no sort of horrible, uncomfortable settling in phase off the field. This makes sense because, as I say, I don't think we can go out and get a dumb Solanke. And I think it does present an interesting debate as to what happens with a John Duran. But I don't know. I feel like this makes, you know, and again, I can see the comments now. People are going, you know, we're in a title race, we're in a Champions League race, and we're signing championship players. You have to, you know, this is future proofing. We're looking ahead. And I think, you know, particularly, you may have to enlighten me on a fee, mate. I'm not sure. I haven't seen too much being banded around about how much we're paying for this guy. But I can assure you it's like a drop in the water when it comes to, again, a Dominic Solanke price tag.
Well, this is an interesting one. And I think this is where, and the same with a lot of the deals that we're getting linked with, you've really got to trust Monchi, the scouting department, the recruitment guys, the analysis, because the numbers don't jump out, right? This is a player that plays as much on the wing as he does up front. When you look through his kind of career to date, although, look, he's not old, you know, he's only 21, but he's played for four clubs through the EFL, racked up 99 league appearances, 15 goals. He's got 6 in all comps this season for Borough, has said 2 in the Championship. He's had previous loans at Blackpool, Bournemouth and Lincoln City. So it's kind of one where, yeah, look, if you look at this on the surface, it's not exactly, you know, it doesn't jump out to you as a deal that Villa definitely need to make. But he's got a lot of appearances for the England unders. He's clearly really highly thought of inside Villa and in Borough as well. He's apparently said to be excited by the opportunity, which is always good, but he's 6'4", you know, he's a big lad. He seems to be a really interesting profile. And one thing I will say is that, look, I don't think that necessarily resolves the problem of, and touch wood, we've never really had to kind of encounter this, but should Ollie Watkins pick up a long-term injury? No, you're absolutely right. I still don't think Morgan Rodgers is the guy to step in and fill those boots. But with John Duran, his feeling and generally the kind of mood around John Duran pretty much ever since he signed has never felt quite right. There's never seemed to be too far away from rumors of another tiff or another fallout, whatever it might be. But kind of, it's very rare that players that are genuinely settled and happy about at clubs that you even get rumors about. Right. You don't see that. Like, you know, you never hear, obviously we kind of had that thing with West Ham and he's opened up about that since, but someone like John McGinn, you don't hear rumours about, you know, John McGinn leaving. You don't hear rumours about Emi Martinez. Like, these are guys that are settled. And this is one thing that people always praise kind of Man City for, is that you never hear rumours about Man City players. You never hear, like, oh, Barcelona and Real Madrid want Rodri, or, like, it's always very players that are genuinely content with where they are. You don't really hear the paper talk around them. And so there's clearly kind of something there. And talks are going to keep on going, but this isn't the Ollie Watkins replacement, I don't think. I just think he's closer to Ollie Watkins is what I will say. So if Ollie did pick up that injury and you put John Duran in, not only have you got a drop off in terms of quality, obviously, but it's also a very different profile, and that can be good. I think it's good. I think there have been many instances this season, probably most notably Crystal Palace at home, where we've made that switch and John Duran's well in the China shop physicality approach to the game has changed it, and he's gone on to win it single-handedly. But Morgan Rodgers probably feels more like a plug-and-play replica of Ollie Watkins. And that's not to say I think they're identical players, but he's definitely closer than John Duran is. And so that's an interesting way to look at it. It is a really interesting deal. I'd be interested to see kind of what the plan would be for him once he got in at the club. But Yeah, I mean, on the surface, I think there's enough there to show that this is something that we should be excited about and hopefully something we can expect to see happen this window.
Yeah, I think this would be an exciting one, especially long term. And it's like the timing of everything is so funny, man, because obviously John Durant, all the guys, they've had a week off. They've had time off. They're on holiday. They're visiting home countries, whatever. And Durant was sort of ambushed by the paparazzi back in his home nation of Colombia. And they sort of asked him on the move and all the proposed moves, the links to Milan, Chelsea. Chelsea want John Durant. I mean, come on. That just seems absolutely ridiculous. But I guess nothing really surprises me these days with Chelsea. And I felt he answered it, you know, very well, very eloquently, and, you know, was very respectful. And I think ultimately, like, the Chelsea thing's quite interesting, especially because, you know, you get a day later that it sort of all comes out that Villa and West Ham have this sort of long-term admiration for Armando Broja, who Chelsea are trying to flog for 50 million quid, and they also want John Durant. And I'm like, hang on, like, Armando Broja has scored goals in the Premier League. I would go as far to say Armando Broja is Chelsea's best forward out of all the guys they've currently got right now, when he's fit, that is. I know that, you know, it's quite ironic, really. We injured him in a sort of mid-season friendly, didn't we? Yeah. Just before the World Cup in warm weather training. And, you know, that's very unfortunate. I remember, you know, there's a lot to like about Armando Broja. I really like his profile. Feels like a proper centre-forward. But for 50 million quid, you're having a laugh. And I also think long-standing interest, I look at that and I'm like, who on earth at Aston Villa, like, who has long staff? Like, these are all new members of staff. These are all Unai Emery's guys. Who has long-term interest in Armando Broja? Is it the tea lady? Is it the kit man? Is it the player liaison officer? Like, you're going to have to be more specific. And the report came from Nizar Kinsella, who I can personally vouch for as a very good and very reliable source, somebody who used to work with me at Goal, Chelsea correspondent, very good at his job, very well-connected. I know that for a fact. But I read something like that and I'm just like, that does, like, the math doesn't math. You've, like, I would understand if we still had, like, maybe, you know, Johan Langer and Christian Perslow and a couple of those guys sort of looming in the background. But I don't, it's one thing saying a club has long-standing interest and it's another thing saying a manager does, right? Is it Unai Emery that has long-standing interest in Armando Broja, or is it Aston Villa? Because, as I said, who is it? Tea lady, the kit man. I don't have a clue.
Well, I think it's also, find me a club in the Premier League that doesn't admire Armando Broja.
Right, absolutely. Great time at Southampton.
He's a great player, and he had a really good spell at Southampton, and three quarters of the league would take Armando Broja in their squad tomorrow if they could.
Not for 50 million quid, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the thing, is not for that price tag, but these kind of, you know, you don't want to get kind of caught up in these kind of statements and everything like that. And so it's when you see these kind of rumors around the players that we're going to kind of talk to today, and you almost, they feel so much more reliable and in tune with what the club's going after. And I think that's why, you know, neither of the players in John Durant or in Morgan Rodgers is going to be the one to replace Ollie Watkins. But in the same vein, we are not going to find Ollie Watkins understudy in the January transfer window. We're just not. It's not the window to, it's not a buyer's market at the best of times, let alone strikers. But there's no club in the world that wants to give up a goal scorer at this time in the season. And our pursuit of Morgan Rodgers is evidence of that. And he's only got two championship goals this season. Players that are doing well for clubs, and even if they have a remote goal threat, clubs don't want let them go halfway through a season. And so if we are going to find Ollie Watkins as understudy, it's got to be done in the summer.
It absolutely, man. Amen to that. And again, just so we're 100% clear, because I feel like whenever we talk about this, people are like, you guys don't respect Ollie Watkins. That's just complete and utter nonsense. I'm sorry. Ollie Watkins, we adore him. He's fantastic. Finding a replacement would be very difficult. We're also not trying to sell him either, when we're definitely not talking about somebody who's born in 2002 as coming in and replacing him. Like, let's just get that clear. But most of you guys know that anyway. That's just to the one or two comments that seem to, you know, take things out of context. And, you know, sort of staying on the topic of players that have been linked, mate, that feels realistic, we're after an Emi Martinez replacement. It's not a replacement. Oh my God. Oh my God. Emi Martinez replacement incoming. This is interesting. I've literally not long just got finished watching a highlights reel on this guy. Not going to claim that I'm an expert at all, but I'm going to let you, one, say the name because I butchered it off air. But two, this is exciting for the channel because it's the first Icelandic player since our favourite ever Aston Villa player, Dan, Birkir Bjarnason. We're the only guys that love Birkir Bjarnason. And I was thinking about Birkir the other day because when we went to Middlesbrough, I spent, you know, an extended period of time at home with my family for the Christmas and New Year. So I didn't have like my full shirt collection that I've got. I've got a couple of shirts that I keep there just in case, you know, when I'm back for games or whatever. And I was wearing my 18-19 third kit, Luke Roper, you know, the purple number with the sort of V going down. Really nice kit. I'd forgotten I got Birkir Bjarnason on the back of it. And I put it on and I was like, this is so nostalgic, but like almost for all of the wrong reasons. And I mean, let that be a lesson to you, ladies and gentlemen. Be careful who you put on the back of your shirts. Nevertheless, I stand by it. I thought Bjarnason was a tidy player. I still do. And, you know, delighted to see that another Icelandic player could be on their way to Villa.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I may, any Villa fan listening to this podcast or knows someone or anything like that that has Bertrand Traoré on the back of a home kit, let me know because I'm yet to see one. I think I might be the only man to have. And so I can join you there, mate, of obscure Villa players on the back of shirts. But hey, let's run it. Hakon Valdemarsson. That's what I'm going with. Born October 2001. Is a very exciting young 22-year-old keeper currently applying his trade in Sweden. He was goalkeeper of the season 2023 for his club, so he's just come up a very successful kind of calendar year. He had a very good time since he moved to Sweden from Iceland, so he was playing in Iceland up until 2021, made the switch then to Elfsborg, where he's been playing since. He's racked up, I think, 47 league appearances. He's, as I say, a player that I don't know too much about, but it looks like this is something that could happen. He's already been questioned on the move as well, which is interesting. So I've got a few quotes here, which I just wanted to read out. Suggested that there's a lot of interest in him right now. He seems to be a very wanted man in this window. Said, there's interest from many clubs right now. We will see what happens. I'll listen to alternatives. But then he was asked specifically about Villa, and he has a lot of compliments for us, it seemed. Said, it's big, it's a top club in the Premier League, and they play very well. It's great to see that they are interested. It showed that I played well last season. They asked him a few questions about Emi Martinez. He was very complimentary then. And it seems like the main interest is also coming from Copenhagen, and he confirmed this himself. Said Copenhagen is also a big club. They've played in the Champions League 2 years in a row, probably Scandinavia's biggest team. It's not as big as the Premier League, but still it would be a very good step up. So it looks like there's a lot of clubs encircling for the player. And I mean, given Copenhagen's recruitment strategy is usually bulletproof, they're one of the best kind of talent factories in Europe. It's always good, I think, when you're in for players alongside clubs like that. Looks like you could get him out for a fee of around 2.25 million, which you'd imagine is a snip for us. But for a side like Elfsborg, that's going to be a lot of money. It remains to be seen kind of where he'd fall into the pecking order. I think it's interesting that today it's official that Philip Marshall is one of the outgoings from the club that we can run through perhaps at the end of the episode. But he's got a loan to MK Dons. There's absolutely no news whatsoever about Robin Olsen leaving the club. So whether he would come in and potentially fill Philip Marshall's shoes for now with a view to becoming the backup goalkeeper maybe at the end of the season, I'm not sure. But I can't imagine he's going to come in and be the number two straight away. It feels like a lot for him to even come in and step in for Robin Olsen, who, let's not forget, has played a fair bit of football this season. And I don't think he'd play as much in the second half of the season. But Olsen obviously played a lot of the Conference League games. He played the League Cup game. He played the, like, we've seen a lot of Robin Olsen. Obviously, Emi Maazel did start in the FA Cup, if I'm not mistaken. But Olsen's played a lot of football. And I think it would be a lot to ask this, you know, young kind of 22-year-old keeper that's only ever played in Scandinavia to come in and play in the Conference League for the side expected to go on and win it. But again, very similar to Morgan Rogers, mate. He's a lot of experience. He's played for all of the unders for Iceland. He's been capped for Iceland as well. So national team pedigree there as well. All points towards a very, very good and capable goalkeeper. And it's one of, if not the most difficult position, I think, to recruit for in a squad, a kind of second or even third choice goalkeeper, because it's such a specific profile. I feel like you've either got to be very young or very old to come in and fill that role and do it willingly. And we've gone for the former, which I think is to be expected of Villa. But it's exciting. I like it. As I said, I don't know too much about it, but we kind of have to... That's what we're here to do, to fill you guys in. And that's as much as I've managed to find out.
Absolutely, mate. Very comprehensive. Got to give you flowers there, mate. Absolutely brilliant. And I think as well, I mean, like, Marshall has made one or two appearances for the first team as well, Conference League and whatnot. So it's interesting to see where this one is. And I think specifically, mate, talking about young goalkeepers, they just never seem to break through at Villa. I feel like there was Mateusz Sarkic, who I thought was a very good goalkeeper, and I think has sort of proved his level probably is the Championship, but still a relatively good keeper in the Championship. You know, he's had time at Blues, he's had time at Wolves. I'm not actually sure where he is currently, but I always liked the look of Sarkic in the unders. I used to watch a lot of the unders.
There is at Millwall now.
Millwall, okay. Well, you know, solid Championship club. There's Victor Johansson, who I believe is at Rotherham currently. He went to Leicester, had a few loans to Rotherham. I know he's somewhere around here in Yorkshire and is a very good goalkeeper, again, in the Championship. These are guys, like, it's difficult, right? I think goalkeeper probably is the most difficult position to play. And a lot of these guys sort of do end up blossoming at 26, 27, 28 when they finally get probably like 50 games under their belt, really. A lot of goalkeepers won't play more than 50 or even 100 games by the time they hit 30, just due to the sort of lack of availability, right? Only going to be one goalkeeper for any team, at any given time. So it's a bit of a difficult one. So it's going to be interesting to see. This is clearly a long-term play. And as you say, mate, a couple of million euros, we could be looking at a sort of 10 million flip in 5 years' time. And then, you know, it looks like a bit of good business, really, doesn't it, mate? So, you know, whether or not he is Emi Martinez's successor, whether or not he is destined to be Aston Villa's number one, we can't really say. I like the look of the highlights reel, and I love a Scandinavian. So, you know, is Iceland in Scandinavia? I don't think it is.
I hope so, for the sake of this podcast, because I've just sat there and said it about five times.
Well, he's playing in Scandinavia, so we can allow that. But yeah, this is an interesting one, and like this feels like there's legs to it. I think ultimately, you know, this isn't a brosier long time admirer. You know, like, these ones don't really come out of nowhere. So
I think Fabrizio has spoken on both of them as well. So
there you go, tap in merchant. So we know there is some truth there. And yeah, I mean, we've got a bit of sort of stuff to talk about, I guess, with some sort of loans and recallings and sendings out and stuff like that. I think the more interesting one for me, mate, is Kane Kessler-Hayden and the comments that Plymouth Argyle manager has made. We seem to have said that he's coming back to sort of compete for his spot. And I find that quite interesting, because we kind of speculated when we heard this the other day that maybe there's a potential sale that is lined up. And I think given the FFP circumstances, you sell as many as the kids as there are, as much as there is interest in them. And, you know, it's interesting to hear this, mate, isn't it? Because not that we've necessarily seen a lot of Kane in a Villa shirt. He was, you know, a predominant figure in that FA Youth Cup winning side. And I have to say, I liked what I saw. But I don't know. It's one of them where it's like, is this more just for sort of cover? is he really challenging? Are we going to see Kane Kessler-Hayden represent Aston Villa this season? I hope so. I'd really like to see it. But I don't know. And what does this mean for Matty Cash?
Well.
Sneeze. Sorry.
Well. We've got some quotes, yeah, from Ian Foster, who's weighed in with the departure. He said that Villa have assured us that he's going back to fight for his place and we wish him well. And then added that he's a lovely kid. So shout out to you. Okay.
Absolutely.
And he was really disappointed to be leaving, which, you know, he seems to have a real affinity for them if he's played some fantastic football there. Obviously, they've had a little bit of a change in what is kind of the sphere of football that we operate in. And there's a bit of twist to the whole managerial saga that's been going on there as well. So Ian Foster's just come in at Plymouth. He replaced Stephen Schumacher, but Foster came in from Stephen Gerrard's coaching setup at LSEFAC. So he's, you know, maybe Ben Stevie's here for his opinions on Kane Kessler-Hayden, and he clearly made him part of his Plymouth plans. But Villa have come in, put those to a stop, and said that, yeah, you're going to come in. And it's very interesting. So it says that he will compete for a spot in Unai Emery's first team squad. Squad is the operative word there, I think, mate. He's not going to compete for a spot in Unai Emery's first team, but in the first team squad. And I think we've seen enough from Kane Kessler-Hayden to say that he kind of feels that, you know, of all the youngsters that we've kind of got on loan at various places and everything like that, he kind of feels like the one that I think would be the most first team ready in terms of what we've seen from him so far, and B, probably that he would match most Emery's style.
Absolutely.
I really think the way that he bombs on down that right hand side, and what we've seen from him in a Villa shirt and in the shirts of Plymouth and teams like that, and how well he's impressed, shows that there really is something there. He's only 21 years old. So it'd be interesting to see kind of what the spot is. Obviously, we know that the big thing about the Nedeljkovic signing is that he's going to be joining up with the squad in the summer. I think we definitely need some right back depth. And so, yeah, maybe I don't. It's a weird one in that you don't want to disrupt what seems to be a very fruitful loan for all parties, just so that you can have a bit of cover in the squad. You don't want to stunt Kane Kessler-Hayden clearly has a very good thing going, and you don't want to stunt that just so that you can put him on the bench for, you know, 10 fixtures between here and the end of the season. But if he is genuinely going to be on with a shout of playing, if he's going to get some minutes here and there, then I think this could be beneficial. But, you know, it's probably one we'll have to come back to this in a month's time and go, yeah, that's worth it, or why did we do that sort of thing? You know, we want to see him kind of in and around the first team. And I want that for him as well, because I think he's rightly upset to be leaving Plymouth. He clearly, you know, he's a very valued member of that team. He's playing first team football regularly. And so I too would be a little bit upset if I was kind of called back from that to maybe come and warm the bench.
Is this a play for UEFA conference rules in terms of squads, like homegrown players?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially. I know there was this whole, you know, thing with Omari Kellerman not being in the matchday squad for the group stages for contract reasons, and, you know, recently changing clubs and not actually qualifying for certain things. So maybe this is, you know, something to cover that as well. That is something to be considered. But in terms of other outgoings, mate, what else did we have to discuss before we wrap this one up?
So there's a couple of ones from me. It looks like Morgan Sanson, remember him. He's still on our
Sanson filler.
This is the... Honestly, mate, maybe you and I...
We're
it's time to start a dialogue. We have terrible talent ID.
Yeah, we do.
We have repped four players on this podcast: Keenan Davis, Wesley, Perkie Bjarnason, and Morgan Sanson. Those are the four players that have been on our hills to die on, and none of them have ended very well. So, you know, next time we identify one of these players that we're going to die on that hill, we need to make sure it's a good one. But yes, Morgan Sanson, probably the most recent one. He's been at Nice, believe it or not, it feels like he's left the club permanently about six times. But no, they have all been loans. He's still at the club, but it looks like there's a £4 million option. Nice are having a fantastic season in Liga, and Morgan Sanson's very rightly wanting to be a part of that. We never really treated him very well in B6, I think it's fair to say. So it looks like he's going to be made permanent as well. As I said, Philip Marshall's gone to MK Dons, which is a big move for him. And then the last one, kind of one that snuck under the radar, not just a kid I've seen play for Villa, but Rico Richards will spend the rest of the season at League 2, Stockport County, sorry. So apparently a number of EFL clubs were sniffing around him, according to John Townsley. But yeah, he's joined promotion hopefuls Stockport County, so we'll wish him well. But I think that's about it, mate. Yeah, there's a fair bit going on. It's been a busy day, a lot of incomings and outgoings, kind of these little low-key ones, a few loans and stuff like that. But I think that just about wraps it up.
Yeah, and I mean, for Rico, he's sort of finishing what Louis Barry started, hopefully. He can have just as good of a time as Barry has had. But the Zoom is about to run out. This has been a fantastic episode, if I do say so myself. Dan, it's been a pleasure as always. Guys, if you enjoyed this, let us know. Leave a comment in the comment section down below. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, make sure you're following. Download the episode, 5-star rating, share with your friends. It all helps more than you guys could imagine. And yeah, like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.